Okay, we're running almost half an hour late, and I assume that that means we just run over into the lunch hour, and we may get some word from the conference organizers as to whether they want to push back the 3 o'clock session. Maybe they can let me know that. But in any case, we'll go now until it's just before 12 till no, just before 1. Sorry, till 1:30. And as Sarah outlined at the beginning, we'd like to work on a round system. Nobody gets to speak a second time until everybody who's spoken first time wants to. And just to urge you, if there's a lot of people that want to speak, not to go on too long, I'll sort of encourage you to finish if it seems like you're taking up a lot of time, but I'm not going to put any limits on the time until I get a sense of how many people want to speak.
Can you move down so I can buy that TV?
Okay, there's a mic over by this TV right here behind the column, is that right? I can't see it, but right there. If you'd if you'd prefer to use a mic, or if not, just put your hand up and Kelly will keep the list and we'll recognize you.
Can you move down?
Yes, I would.
Maybe we could bring the mic. Is that possible to move it? Is it taped to the floor? It's sort of a bit strange not to be able to see the great.
Hi, I'd just like to ask the last speaker, and maybe all the speakers would like to comment on this statement, what you think of this statement. As long as pornography portrays violence against women as erotic, women will never be equal.
I guess I think about that like I think about the statement. Rape, pornography is the theory, rape is the practice. It's a reduction of something that seems to me highly unprovable. I think the fight around misogyny and images is only one aspect of it, and I really do not believe that the freeing up of or the discouragement of those images ultimately will determine what happens to women. So I'm unmoved by it, though I think it's a nice catchphrase. But I don't think it ultimately says how to organize against violence against women, concretely. Nor do I think it helps us figure out what our own participation in conflicted sexual situations are and our own relation is to power. And as long as that's true, I don't like those kinds of statements which assume to know about what it is that's both misogynist and what it is that will or won't free us. I haven't heard enough to know what that is or not.
I just wanted to add that as long as women aren't getting the same kind of pay that men are, we're not going to be equal either.
I think what I was hoping was coming out of my talk was the kind of complexity of distinguishing those categories. I don't think that eroticism and pornography are very useful categories in terms of describing things because they're very subjective. And what I also hope was coming out of that is that the relationship of women and culture generally is already one of censorship. And it is also intimately related to all kinds of areas of our lives. So I don't know that we can just attack it at that one point. I agree with what Amber's been saying.
Okay, just the way I'm going to proceed now, who is ever at the mic, but if you don't want to speak, stand up to do it, just put your hand up and we'll slot you in on the speaker's list.
Okay. I'd like to just come up to the table. I'd like to use the mic.
Sure.
I'd like to face the board. Thank you. It seems to me that the reason that this culture is anti-sex and attacks our sexuality, whether through repression or through false images in commercialization, is that it is an anti-feeling society, and that sexuality is just one more feeling that this culture is against. And it seems to me also that the reason that this society is anti-woman, anti-child, anti-people of color, is that it is because is because it is an anti-feeling society and needs or seeks groups of people to project feelings onto. And that feeling angry, for instance, no more needs justification than feeling turned on needs, or feeling turned on in a particular context needs. And that a deeper issue that we all need to address is the anti-feeling theme in the society. And one thing that this culture uses to shield us from our feelings and from our direct experience in any way is the concept of morality. And rather than formulate a feminist morality, I would really like to see the feminist movement be at the forefront of ending the notion that there is such a thing as good and evil, right and wrong.
I have nobody else at the mic and no hands up.
Can I ask a question of the audience? I don't need it, it's all right.
Okay. I'm good now.
I would really like some people to tell me why you're here. It's very hard for us as on the panel to know the different agendas that people brought with them. I don't know who's here. I don't know who it is that's working primarily and sees themselves as artists or image makers, and how many feminists are here and how many gay people are here, blah, 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 all the different breakdowns. I'd really like to know from people sitting here what brought you to this conference.
Go ahead, Betty, if you want to talk about something else.
Well, I'm not sure that I can answer that question other than, for me, I came up to the mic because it's a very fearful topic. And the last speaker was the first one who mentioned fear. And I don't know whether that's sort of a given on all speakers' parts, that to talk about our sexuality, to talk about violence, to talk about incest, to talk about all the things that this conference is supposedly putting out for discussion, is fearful for us. The last speaker was also the first one to mention the virgin whore syndrome, or I prefer the prudent slut dynamic. And I think that it's scary to talk about in terms of a historical overview, but it's also scary for each of us to look at where we feel judged, where we need to broaden our own boundaries or whatever in terms of our own sexuality. So my question to the panelists would be, is there areas where you have done work on looking at that fear? And is there things that you can share with us about how we can first talk about the fear, acknowledge our fear, and then come through to a place where we can strategize from feeling powerful? I mean, I'm a bit of a fantasy novel nut, and there's always a formula in fantasy books that the hero looks at this, the most scary item, the most scary thing in their life, and then they come flashing through into the powerful place. And before I can think about strategy, I have to figure out how I can feel powerful talking about my sexuality. So I'd like to hear some comments on that.
I think maybe we didn't talk enough about exactly that problem. I think it's particularly hard in a conference setting. I think that's a really difficult thing. And if there was one thing I would suggest in a long-range way, it's for women to begin to organize smaller groupings of each other to talk about sexuality. Hopefully not making some of the same mistakes the early CR movements made, where you totally believe your experience is reality. Since I think a lot of what we feel about sexuality is decided for us, including the bad stuff. But I wanted to say something more about the fear and what brings people through it. I think sexuality is one of the most panicky experiences, most difficult to untangle from our backgrounds, most difficult to try and figure out what it means to each of us. And part of why I think it's such a complicated issue to try and and figure out how to approach is precisely the fear of not just the things that were done to us that harmed us, but the things that we enjoyed, admitting the things that brought us pleasure. Because often the things that brought us pleasure seem to be in contradiction to the things that we don't believe in. And I'll try and be as explicit as I can about that. In my own life, I believed very strongly in the kind of feminist notion of the idea of equal partnerships and equal partnering in sexuality. You know, you did your partner did you, and you both did the same thing, and you both felt the same way, and you both, you know, nobody fell asleep before the other person. You know, and that there was a kind of grander feminist notion, I think, about that. That that was an idea about how feminists, male and female, gay and straight, perceived and organized their sexual desires. But what I realized is that I wasn't interested in that. Didn't turn me on very much. It did some of the women that I knew, and for them it worked. But for me, it wasn't enticing at all. It just didn't get. I just would have had to give up sex. And I really didn't want to do that and had no intention of it, since I feel like I've been basically fighting to be a sexual person since I came from a small town and had a bad reputation. So I was prepared to be bad again. Though I was a little, I had more trouble with it when it wasn't a rebellion against my parents. It was a rebellion against my own movement. And what I feel like has happened to me is that I've thought a lot, for instance, about the extraordinary exchange that happens in bed. What it is that you give up and what it is that you take from a partner. And if you remove an exchange of power from that, for me, there's nothing left that's sexual. I really mean to say only that I think this is true for some of us, and really not to say that that's how that everybody organizes their sexuality that way. But I do think that there's a dynamic of giving yourself over to a lover and a lover's control, and the lover returning that, that is not parallel and absolutely identical. My lovers do not make love to me the way I make love to them. We do not carry necessarily the same attitudes about the same acts that we're doing and the reasons we feel them. Most of the women that I'm involved with are women who have been deeply struggling with an issue of being male, because most of the women that I'm involved with are butch. So their issue is around gender, inappropriate gender definitions. They've always been the women that thought they were Errol Flynn on the screen kissing the women, right? That's where they're coming from. They are women that are struggling with that, and the notion that they just wanted male power and they really didn't have any investment in being men doesn't wash. The truth of the matter is they are women that have moved into a new area around gender as well as sexuality. They bring that to bed. And that's why I like them. That's precisely why I like them, because they're women that are very fierce about projecting their own desires. And I like to respond to that. It used to make me crazy when I looked at that. I didn't know what it meant until I realized that what was happening between us was something that we agreed to. And it was something that we were orchestrating ourselves. And it was about desire. And it didn't, whether it fit in anybody else's notions of sexuality or not, I liked it. And I liked myself in it. What I wasn't sure how to deal with was how to explain it politically to my friends. It's not that I thought it hurt me so much, though it frightened me, because I think for any feminist, the idea of giving up control or taking it is terrifying. Either side. I mean, women taking control of another woman's sexuality is a terrifying idea, and a woman releasing to another woman's hands is a terrifying idea. Nevertheless, exactly that exchange was the place I wanted to play, and it was exactly at that place that I felt I could not resolve my feminism with it, and it began to make me think about recreating an idea of sexuality that had to do with how my body felt, not how my ideology sounded. So when we're talking about fear, that's why I think it's more important for us to try and figure out what we do and how we each want to define the damage done to us. Some women feel, for instance, that the things done to them around heterosexuality were the most damaging things. That's not what has happened to me. My fear comes much more from what lesbians will think of me and what's happened to me in a lesbian community. So, I'm sorry. Anyway, I think that if we can begin to tell each other the things that we fear and not worry about what other people have found they fear, the discussion opens up new areas.
That word, fear, I think that's a really important issue, because I think that there isn't enough discussion around both what we fear and what we most desire. Sometimes what we most fear does happen to us. There are ways of overcoming that fear, I think, through finding your own. Power in that situation. I think my, sometimes our fear has to do with death as well. But death that can be intimately related to sexuality. I think it's important, though. This summer, our child was stillborn. And it wasn't as bad as I thought such a thing would be. In fact, I would say that in many ways it was a very empowering experience, in that though the what was desired was gone, the actual process of birthing was to me something that was extremely positive. And I think that we have to kind of draw on those sorts of situations if we're going to deal with contingencies, with things that you can't always even blame on the patriarchy in any way, basically with life. And that for me, sometimes issues of sexuality can be then intimately related to life and to death. I think that all women who've had children have gone through a process where those two things become, at a certain moment, all the same thing. And so I think that's the kind of thing we have to really draw upon, and we can't be silent about. Because death is one of the other things that people don't talk about, as well as their sexuality. So maybe that's a model for some way that we can deal with these things.
It's nice to see all this fear being expressed, because coming up here and sharing what I want to say with you gives me fear. I'm afraid, to a certain extent, of speaking into this microphone, but I'm going to try it anyway. The reason I wanted to come up and talk was because there's so many things already that have come up that really address the kinds of things that I've been thinking about for a very long time. And this is the reason I came to this conference, was because I haven't had a place or a forum to really sit down and hear all of these things aired. Part of that reason is because not only the feminist movement, but the left in general is very single-issue oriented. And I've been working around Latin American solidarity work for a very long time. But I also define myself as bisexual, and that produces an incredible number of problems just straight away. And I kind of sat on it for a very long time. And it wasn't really until about a year ago that I finally sort of came out to the people I was working with and found, I suppose, that they'd already suspected that it had been that kind of cloak and dagger mystery kind of bullshit. I don't know why. Anyway, that's one thing. But the other reason was because for many years I've been very afraid of the feminist movement for exactly some of the reasons that you mentioned, and also because of some of the things I think that Sarah pointed to when she was talking about the kinds of debates that have arisen. I think it's really healthy that we look at all of those debates together. But for a very long time, I felt very excluded by them because I felt myself to be commoditized by them, if I can use that word, in the sense that when we talk about the victimization of women, which is vitally important to talk about, and I've often felt it very difficult to talk about that because sometimes I've had enormous guilt about it, I felt powerless about it. I still think at the same time that we don't talk enough about moments of resistance at the same time. And I don't think those two things exclude each other. That doesn't mean to say at the same time by any means that I think at some point we have to deal with the fact that there's a fight on hand against violent pornography and that kind of thing. But I agree with a lot of the speakers that I don't think we should invite the state any further into our bedrooms than it's already come. And in that sense, I think that the whole question of a feminist morality is also very dangerous. And it's funny that morality came up because when you do Latin American work, for example, and you talk about struggle, and you talk about resistance, and you use all of those words and all of that vocabulary for liberation, for anti-imperialist struggles, you start to think in those terms initially. You start to think that there is a possibility for a new morality that somehow leaps over this bourgeois morality that we've all been brought up with. But I think that that's a real false dichotomy, because what it does is you start to set up a new framing which you force any new person that wants to start to become active and who is already exploring their own avenues of struggle, you force them into that framework. And I think that that's very, very dangerous, because what it does is, on the one hand, it prevents our movements from being able to expand and include new moments of struggle which come up consistently, and also at the same time does exclude people. And that's partly why I wanted to bring up the fact that I felt excluded for a long time from the feminist movement, because I felt that the framework with the little glimpses that I've had of the feminist movement from being outside have in some way defined me before I even set foot inside the door, and that has made me afraid. And I think it's really valuable that we start to discuss this, and that there's room for people like me who've been working in Latin American work. There's room for people who have been working in the gay and lesbian movement. There's room, for example, in a video to show what people in a marketplace are going to say to lesbians and gays when they're actually right there talking to them. And I think that's the kind of environment that we have to fight for. And I just wanted to say I hope this continues, and I'm really enjoying the conference so far.
I don't have anybody else at the mic. No, if people want to. Oh, I have a hand here. Yeah.
I certainly agree with Amber that it's necessary to talk not just about pornography, but about the sources of people's desire, women and men's desire. And what I'm troubled by, in a way, is of course, there's two parts to it. One is the acceptance of oneself and one's desires as they are. And the other is, in that examination, looking at the ways in which our desires are formed, in part by a society which is destructive, or family life which is destructive. And then how does one come to terms with desires which may in part be the product of a culture or society that we don't like? And so one of the things, I guess, that disturbs me is how we, in some sense, is going back to your question about how you put your ideology back together with your politics or with your sexuality. and you've raised it in terms of broadening the definition of sexuality, but I'm not seeing it plugged back in again to politics in a way. Yes, we should accept what we are, even as we're struggling with what we realize are damaging roots, sometimes damaging roots of what we are. And one of the things that occurs to me as I'm listening to you is that the same things could be said by somebody, a man who needs or enjoys the kind of sexual depiction involving violence against women that we would deplore. And he could say, well, it's coming to recognition or acceptance of those aspects of his own sexuality, the roots of which he doesn't know. So what I'm struggling with here is these two points, the acceptance of oneself as one is and the recognition of the ways in which our own sexuality is formulated by things we may not always like or want, and how we do put that together with some other image that we have, some vision that we have of what we would want for ourselves in other situations.
I think there was one other woman with her hand up over here, am I right? I thought maybe we could take a couple of comments and then have the panelists respond. You want them to answer? Okay.
I can't see you, so I'm actually talking to you. Hi. I actually think that's part of why it's so difficult to do, is that fighting to say that, at this point at least, holding the terrain non-judgmentally is scary because it can be misused. There's no doubt about it that it can be misused, and you can hear it all the time in the 80s kind of hip jargon about, you know, liking to not be guilty about, you know, being robber barons or something. But I think there's something deeper underneath that, which is that until you know what it is that people are bringing into sexuality, until we have a better understanding of really not what we think was imposed on us, but what we did with what was imposed on us, I don't think we really have the groundwork laid yet to define a sexual politics. In other words, I can tell you as a feminist precisely what went down in my family, exactly what kind of roles were expected there, the kind of sexual dynamics that I saw, the things that happened to me in high school, blah, blah, blah. But I put them together in very particular and unique ways that are different than any other woman that I know. And so it has a different meaning to me. Some of that is scary to me, and I think it's not terrific. I mean, I just want to say real frankly that although I'm, you know, defending the sexual terrain, I don't want to romanticize it, and I don't mean to say that my own sexuality isn't a painful place for me to look at too. But acceptance of it, to me, is something more than just a kind of passive, I can't do anything about it, that's what I am. It's much more dynamic. It's a taking a look at what it is, really, and why I think I really feel it. And often I'm surprised at what I find. It's not what I assumed from my own feminism was at the core of why I want something to happen. And that one of the things that seems most important to me is that every woman that I know, whatever her sexual history, has a different evaluation of its meaning. And as long as that's true, I don't know yet what it would mean to enclose that conversation. I just don't know what it means, because I make certain assumptions about things that happen to me, and women that had exactly the same thing happen to them assume a very different relationship to the issue. You know, I don't feel the same way about having been raped that some of the women that I know do, who feel it was absolutely key and absolutely, for instance, destructive sexual issue for them, and that it fundamentally affects how they make love now every single time. That's not true for me. It doesn't mean it's not true for them. We carry different things into the bedroom. So what I guess I'm arguing is that until we know more of what those things are, there isn't a way except exploring further what each of us believes the damage is, rather than what the analysis tells us beforehand the damage is.
Um, That question also gets me back to the whole discussion of fear, too, because I think something that goes on when we're looking at our own sexuality is that we sort of jump over the fear into, oh, well, this is how I'm going to incorporate this into my new politics. And I think that's when our politics sort of rolls off the rails. And so what I wanted to get back to is that I think looking at our own sexuality means looking at our own fears, not just having them, but really looking at what our fears are and how we translate those fears into judgments of other people and other people's sexual behavior. And that's a really easy way to forget that you're afraid of something, is to just decide that what somebody else is doing is wrong, instead of looking at what it brings up in you and what kinds of sexual terror or paranoias or desires or whatever are lurking around underneath your judgments. And I think if we can just get to that stage, we're really moving.
Great. The woman, that's right.
I was glad that you mentioned death, because I think it's intrinsically involved in this discussion, and that power and that mystery and that terror are part of the same thing. And I also wanted to mention something about privacy and the fact. I'm also an artist, I want to say that, and I'm a mother. I want to say both of those things, and they are like this. And there's a piece in my mind about the public and the private, and I think it's pertaining to what this is about. I can hardly talk, And there are certain things that I'm also having trouble thinking whether they should be public, and that's, I admire how you can speak so freely. It's it's because we're talking about some untalkable things.